First, it's Food Friday, and this week we're getting ready to grill some ribs. We might not have our usual 4th of July parties this year, but it's still looking like an okay weekend to get outside with the family and cook up a rack of ribs. Whether you prefer to smoke or grill, sauce or dry rub, our next guest can help make sure we end up with something delicious. Meathead Goldwyn is the founder of AmazingRibs.com and the author of the New York Times bestseller, Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling. His newest book is Amazing Ribs Made Easy, everything you need to know about America's favorite food. Meathead, good to have you back with us.
Hello again, Rob. Hot enough for you?
It is a bit on the warm side. I was talking about getting out and grilling this weekend anyway. I don't know if I'm ambitious enough to do ribs this weekend, but I might get out with a grill. How about you?
Well, you know what? The great barbecue guru is doing hot dogs tonight. You can't have a 4th of July weekend without hot dogs.
That sounds good. I'll stop by. You can hand them to me from a safe distance, Meathead.
Well, oh, God.
Now, let's get into ribs. You'll grill anything, but ribs have obviously a special place in your heart. What is it that makes ribs such a perfect grilling food?
Well, they're really the ultimate American food. I mean, we eat turkey on Thanksgiving, and I think ribs is just the 4th of July. You know, barbecue is not, as many people think, an American invention. It was been around since caveman times and was heavily popular in Asia, Africa. But ribs as a cut of meat really is uniquely American. The rib bones, which come from along the back attached to the loin muscle, is typically served in Europe attached to the loin muscle. So taking them off the loin muscle and cooking them, because they're very tough, was given to the enslaved peoples. While master ate high off the hog, the loin muscle, which was more tender. So that's where the expression high on the hog came from. The African-American slaves figured out how to take this tough cut of ribs, because there's a lot of connective tissue in between those bones, and there's a lot of fat, and it's tough, and the wealthy people didn't want anything to do with it. They figured out that if you cook it low and slow, you can keep it tender, and boy, does it get succulent and juicy if you cook it the proper way.
And I should say, when we say ribs here, we're talking pork ribs.
Well, you know, there's beef ribs are fantastic, but you don't find them easily in stores. And yeah, I think when we speak of ribs, most of us are thinking of pork ribs. But I'll tell you, I've seen more and more barbecue joints serving beef ribs. Yes, indeedy.
Now, you mentioned the right way to cook them. Number one, the key secret, if I'm reading your information right, you got to boil it first, right? I'm messing with you, man.
We like to say on AmazingRibs.com that if you boil ribs, the terrorists have won. Well, here's why. Now, boiling ribs does, in fact, make them tender, and it certainly speeds up the cooking because hot water transmits energy faster than warm air, so you can get them done a lot faster. But when you take them out of the water and you look at the water is brown. And that's all flavor that the water has sucked out of the meat. You know, water is a solvent. That's why you wash your car with it. It sucks flavor out of the meat. The way to get the most flavorful ribs is to roast them in warm air at a low temperature. We like to recommend around 225. If you get the temperature much higher, the muscles contract and squeeze out the juices, and that makes them tough. So low and slow.
Talking to Meathead Goldwyn about great ways to cook ribs, maybe this holiday weekend. Let's talk about that low, slow cooking style. To do it really right, we want to allow hours here. And this is an indirect grill. Tell us how we're setting up first a charcoal and then a gas grill to grill these guys indirectly.
Yeah, or indoors for that matter. You keep that temperature low, and baby backs will take 3 to 4 hours at 225. And spare ribs or the center cut St. Louis ribs will take 5 to 6 hours to get them up to. Now, you're not going to believe this out there, folks, but you want to cook them up to about 190 to 205 degrees internal temperature. Now, well done is 155. This is way past well done. But what happens at those temperatures, especially if you cook them at a low temp, is it melts the connective tissues and turns it into soft, gelatinous material, and it also renders the fat. And that's what makes it succulent and juicy and tender. So if you're going to do them on a charcoal grill or a gas grill, you want to divide the grill in half. You want one side of it with hot charcoal or flame, the other side, nothing. No flame, no charcoal. And you're going to cook these ribs on the indirect or the no-flame side, where it's sitting there gently bathing in warm circulating air. You can throw wood chips or chunks on the flames or coals on the other side, and then that circulating air will be smoky, and that adds another flavor to the meat. But you don't want to put it directly over the coals or the flame, otherwise it will get too hot and shrink the muscle fibers and squeeze out juices.
Do we ever want to put a sear on it right at the end even?
Well, yeah, you know the answer to that because you asked exactly the right question. Yeah, when it's getting close to done, and you can tell, there's an easy way to tell. You should have a digital thermometer. If you're going to be a good outdoor cook, nothing will improve your cooking better than a digital thermometer. But another trick is you can take a slab of ribs and hold it with a pair of tongs and kind of bounce them. And if the surface cracks, you're probably close to done. And at that point, you want to put your sauce on. No earlier. You don't put the sauce on until almost the end because there's sugar in the sauce and it can burn. So you put the sauce on at the end, and don't go crazy with the sauce. I know everybody loves barbecue sauce, and I know when you're done putting it on with the brush, you suck the brush. But if you put too much on there, you just cover over the smoke. You cover over the rub. You cover over the meat flavor. So just add it on. It's just another instrument in the orchestra. And then you move it over the hot side, over the flames or the coals, and you sizzle on that sauce. It'll actually bubble. You'll see it sizzle. And what happens is it caramelizes or changes the molecular structure of the sugar, and that really amplifies it.
But you got to be careful, I imagine. You want to caramelize it, but not let it get to where it's burning? Is that right?
Yeah, you want to stand right there. When you put the ribs on the indirect side at the start of the cook, you can walk away. You can go socialize. As long as your temperature is holding fairly stable, you can, you know, let her go for 4 or 5 hours. But when you move it over to the hot side, you keep the lid up and you stand right there. Don't go to the bathroom. Don't go to the refrigerator. If you run out of beer, that's too bad. Just stand there and watch them because they will burn in a hurry.
Let's go a little earlier in the process now with that rub. Do we need to get that rub on there, you know, the night before? Is it like marinating or does it matter?
Well, most rubs have a lot of salt in it. They also have other compounds. They'll have paprika, garlic, onion, and stuff. But what's really interesting is salt can penetrate the meat. It gets a little electrical charges on it. It's just sodium and chloride, and they penetrate deep. But the other stuff, like sugar, 23 atoms, it can't penetrate very far beneath the surface. So most everything is going to sit on the surface except salt. And when salt gets into the fibers, it actually helps them hold on to moisture. So I recommend that you make your own rubs and you don't put salt in them. You put the salt on hours before you're ready to cook or overnight, but it doesn't matter when you put the rest of the spices on because they're not going in. They're just sitting on. Now, if you've bought a rub in the store, you'll probably notice it's half salt and you just paid a lot of money for salt. But then it makes sense to get that on a few hours early so the salt can get moving down into the meat.
Meathead Goldwin is with us, founder of AmazingRibs.com, author of the new book, Amazing Ribs, Made Easy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for Meathead about cooking ribs? He has, I'm pretty sure, an answer. What to buy, how to smoke or grill them. If you are an experienced rib maker, what is your go-to method? What do you look for in a rub and or a sauce? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Farad. We're talking to Meathead Goldwyn, founder of AmazingRibs.com. It's Food Friday. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You looking to make some ribs maybe this weekend? Do you know your method or do you need some advice from Meathead? Either way, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard on Facebook from a couple people, actually, Marcus says, most importantly, never, ever wrap the ribs. Now, you talk about this idea of wrapping the ribs on your website, Meathead. What's that all about?
Well, I don't know that you should never, ever wrap. A lot of competitors, in fact, do wrap the ribs. What happens is, but maybe I think this person's thinking in general. A lot of people will wrap it in foil and then throw it on the grill. If you've done that, you're just braising it in or steaming it inside the foil. But it's interesting, competing teams of barbecue chefs will occasionally roast the ribs in a smoky, warm air environment like we talked about, and then about halfway through, they'll wrap it with foil or even butcher paper, and that helps tenderize. They only leave it in there for about an hour, but it helps tenderize it. It's an extra step that you can do to make it a little more tender, but it's a waste of foil, and it doesn't make a huge difference, but it does make a small difference. And if you're competing for a $10,000 check, you got to get for every advantage you can.
The pratfall, though, is if you foil it for too long, if I read it right on your website, you run the risk of mush.
Yeah, it'll come out mushy, just like as if you steamed it.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We've got Chris with us in Adams. Chris, hello.
Hi. Well, you sort of stole my thunder a little bit because you know what you're talking about. I wanted to talk about sauce, though, and everybody needs to understand that this is a whole day project. This is not something that you just stick on the grill and walk away from it. The sauce that you buy at the grocery store is garbage, and you should never use that. If you're going to put all of that energy into building the right fire and putting your cherry or your apple chips on it and doing all that stuff with your ribs, the last thing you want to do is put bad sauce on top of it. So I'm just going to give you briefly my fast recipe. I take some bacon grease and I take the bacon out of the pan because you're going to put that in your baked beans later, and I saute some onions and garlic, and then I put in a big can of frozen concentrated pineapple orange juice, and that is the liquid base for your sauce. And then I add a whole pile of fresh fruit, some more fresh pineapple, mangoes, peaches, whatever you can get your hands on. And when this is all cooked down, you really don't have to add an awful lot of other sugar to get it to caramelize. You can put some brown sugar, some honey or something in there if you want to, if it's not sweet enough. And then a big can of tomato paste. Wow. And when you get that cooked all the way down, I take half of it out and put it on my meat, and the other half is for the beans. You just shoot your beans in there, and then you've got your beans that are matching, and then you put your bacon back in with your beans.
I'm coming to your house.
Wow, Chris, thank you. Wow, that's detailed.
That sounds like fun. I do agree. It's always fun to make your own sauce because people will say, wow, that sauce is great. Where'd you get it? Oh, I made it. Oh, what's the recipe? Then I have to kill you. You know that routine. We have some really good sauce recipes on our website, too.
That's AmazingRibs.com. Chris, thank you. That sounds pretty amazing, too. I love the double duty she gets out of the sauce. It goes on the ribs, and it goes on one of the side dishes, too.
Yeah, into the beans. Hey, you know, you mentioned the new book we just published about ribs. And I got to tell you, it's an e-book only. It's not in bookstores, so don't go looking in bookstores. My big book, the book Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling, is in all the bookstores and on Amazon. But the rib book just came out 2 weeks ago. It's only on Amazon as an e-book. You can download it there, and it's only $3.99. But it's got just about everything we know about ribs in there, including a really good sauce recipe and a good rub recipe.
Thanks a lot for that call, Chris, at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Kevin now in Rochester, Minnesota. Kevin, hi.
Good morning or good afternoon.
Hey.
I'm using a 20-inch Weber grill, and I seem to always cook it too fast.
Mm-hmm.
What's the secret of cooking on doing ribs on the grill?
Okay, well, actually, it's a 22-inch Weber grill, and the secret is to push all the coals over to one side. Now, a lot of the manuals show you pushing the coals to both sides and the ribs in the middle. That's going to be too hot. Get the coals all off to one side. If you're laying the coals across the bottom, you're going to be too hot. It's going to cook too fast. You're either going to burn them or they're going to be tough as nails. So you've got to push all the coals to one side. And if they keep sliding down, you can put a couple of bricks in there to hold them up against the side. And don't put too many in there. If you use a charcoal chimney to start, and that is the best way to start them, then use about 3/4 of a chimney. A Weber kettle, a Weber chimney holds 80 briquettes, so that we're talking about 50 or 60 briquettes. That should get you into your target temp of around 225, depending on the air temp. You know, if it's 96 like it is today, you're going to need fewer charcoals than you would on a winter day, for example. There's a gadget for the Weber kettle called the Slow and Sear. Slow and then the letter N, Sear. And it sells for about $100, and it's fantastic. It holds those charcoals up against the side, and it's got a water dam in there, which helps mitigate the temperature and also puts humidity in the atmosphere. And I've got an article all about it on our website. I don't sell them, but go read about the Slow and Sear on our website, and I have a link to the company that sells them. That thing will really up the capabilities of your Weber kettle.
Kevin, thanks a lot. Hope that helps. We are talking to Meathead Goldwyn about cooking ribs, grilling them in particular. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Here's another comment from Facebook, Meathead. PJ writes, I actually bake my baby back ribs, creates a really awesome consistency. I prefer, he says, a dry rub and multiple dipping sauces. And you mentioned baking earlier as an acceptable alternative. A little hot to start in the oven today, I'll say, but maybe in winter mm-hmm. we want those ribs.
Well, baking, I mean, when you put the meat on a grill away from the coals, you're baking it or roasting it. You know, it's a very fine line difference between baking and roasting, and I've been cooking all my life. I'm in my 70s. I don't know what the difference between baking and roasting is. It's just cooking it in warm, circulating air. And that's baking or roasting. And you can do it in an oven. And, in fact, a grill is just an outdoor oven, for crying out loud. Only it doesn't have a good thermometer.
Now, how about if we want to get that sear on at the end? Can we just do that on the stovetop?
No, broiler.
Okay.
You've got a broiler in there, and your broiler is an open flame. Now, on an electric, it's still right there underneath. So you put it in your oven. You set it at 225. You put it on a rack if you can, not in a pan, so that you can get warm air all around it. You don't have to flip it. Just walk away for 3 to 4 hours for baby backs, 4 to 5 hours for St. Louis cut or spare ribs. And then when it's ready, you just paint the sauce on and switch to broil and stand, just like with the grill, stand there and watch it closely because it can catch fire.
All right, Meathead, I don't want to make you mad at me here, but you say this is America's food, and we're Americans, and sometimes we want things fast. Is there, if we got that, you know, it's after work, and we want to grill ribs, and we want to eat them before midnight, is there an okay way to cook them faster?
You can speed up the process slightly by cutting them into individual bones. Now, when you do that, you're going to surround it with more energy. So if you cook it as a slab, it's only getting heated from above and below. But if you cut them into individual bones, the heat will come through from the sides. And that'll cut your cooking time in half. If you absolutely have to speed them up, don't boil them or simmer them or steam them. Microwave. If you throw them in the microwave, you can get them pretty thoroughly cooked in 15, 20 minutes and then just finish them on the grill. You'd have to experiment. Everybody's microwave is different. Another technique that has been working very well for me and a bunch of friends is sous vide. Now, this is the ultimate slow and low, but you actually put the ribs into a plastic bag, suck all the air out, and you stick it in warm water, about 145 degrees, and leave it there for hours. Put it in the morning, go to work. When you come home, it's thoroughly cooked. Then all you got to do is take them out of the bag, sauce them, and sear the heck out of them on the grill or under the broiler.
Hmm. That sounds really good. Well, I don't want to get out of here, Meathead, without talking about your favorite sides. We heard about Chris's beans and bacon earlier. What else do you like to have with your ribs?
Well, you know, I love to experiment. Anybody who's hung around my website knows that I'm into Asian and European styles. But 4th of July, man, it's Americana. You got to do ribs. You got to do beans. You got to do baked potato salad. Now, right now, our garden, the basil is in. And I just got somebody else was saying on the website, their basil's in now. So make yourself a little pesto or just chop up the basil, boil up some potatoes, and instead of mayonnaise, pesto potatoes are awesome. And they're perfectly wonderful in this time of year.
All right. And Meathead, you said your next grilling project is actually hot dogs. What is your condiment?
Well, I'm from Chicago.
Oh, so there's all
seven,
of them.
Seven ingredients, and you can't vary at all. And there's no ketchup allowed down here in Chicago. But, yeah, I mean, you know, 4th of July, we usually have a big party. The family, the neighbors are all over here. And you got to have hot dogs for the kids, and I always sneak one. My wife does, too. I love hot dogs. And so tonight is hot dogs. Tomorrow night we're doing ribs.
All right, enjoy that celery salt on that Chicago dog. That's key, right?
People forget the darn celery salt. Hey, Rob, you really know your food. It's so much fun to talk to you.
You too, Meathead. It's been a lot of fun again. Thanks, and have a great holiday weekend.
You too, everybody.
That's Meathead Goldwyn, founder of AmazingRibs.com. His latest ebook is called Amazing Ribs Made Easy. He was with us to share some smoking and grilling tips ahead of the holiday weekend. He's been on in the past to talk about his book, physical book, Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling.